Amway Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as always, live in person in the studio. And we're going to be here for the next hour talking about all the things we want to talk about. Unless you want to talk about something. At which time, all you need to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. It couldn't be easier. Better yet, put it on your speed dial. That way you don't have to remember.
That is easier.
It is. Absolutely. That's why nobody knows any phone numbers anymore. Anyway, we have a lot to do today on this very special edition of the Schumer Shutdown Weekend Show. And it was alluded to very directly a couple of minutes ago on air that we would talk about it and all of its implications. And I asked them very briefly, what do we do with the other 59 and a half minutes?
Have you noticed anything different this morning?
I got up this morning and the heat was on in my house and the cool was on in my refrigerator, but the ice maker didn't work.
I don't think it was working yesterday either.
Nor the 3 days before that. But I still blame the Schumer.
You would.
Naturally. The failed Schumer administration that never came to be. All right, well, enough of that. That's political junk. The truth of the matter is that the news, aside from that little thing, is really exceptionally good, and it just keeps getting better.
That is true.
So for all of you out there who are investors, you probably can't get the smiles off your face. For those of you who are financial advisors, you are probably just as happy as the people you're dealing with. And it's really a lot of fun when people get together and talk about money these days, and everybody walks away with a great big smile on their face. It is an absolute pleasure, and it's not an accident. And that's, if we're going to drive one thing home in the next few weeks, months, whatever, it's going to be that this is not an accident. It's happening for very sound reasons economically. It's the right policy, and it's scaring a lot of people to death. Most of them on the other side, but not all of them. There's still a lot of scared investors who think this market is too high. We will try to make the argument for you that you should relax and enjoy it because it doesn't look to be going anywhere soon unless it's just a temporary little dip. So all that being said, let's talk about how good it was. Records, again, were made to be broken, right?
Absolutely. And we did see a little bit more volatility this week, though, than we've seen in the first couple of weeks this year.
Yeah, it wasn't zero.
Right.
So exactly. It was more than normal.
Yeah. Despite that, all three major indexes ended up gaining ground, which is nice. Tuesday was an especially interesting day. The market opened up really big and then reversed midday for absolutely no apparent reason. Normally, when you see something like that, there's some news driving it, but we just saw some good old market volatility, which is we haven't seen. So it was kind of an anomaly to say over the last year, we just haven't seen markets behave like that at all. Usually when you start up a big day, it ends up a big day. Mm-hmm. The Dow and the NASDAQ both gained 1%, while the S&P was up 0.9%. We saw several pretty major milestones cross this week, with the Dow closing over 26,000 and the S&P closing over 2,800. That now makes 7 1,000-point thresholds crossed since Trump was elected.
And this was the quickest one ever.
Yep. What was it?
13
days, yeah, seven trading days, something like mm-hmm. that, at 9 trading days, I think.
Yeah, and of course, we always point out that each 1,000 points is statistically easier because
right.
the percentage gain is less. That does not dampen my enthusiasm one little bit.
And while it was another good week for U.S. equities, the real winners were the international markets again. And if you have been listening to the show, we've been saying that we are not surprised by that. Mexico was the best performing market, with the ETF that tracks it, EWW, up more than 3.7% this week. Year to date, the best performers are still Italy and Russia.
So they can afford to pay for a wall.
Who, no. Italy and Russia?
No, Mexico.
Yeah, we'll see about that. I still don't buy that.
Oh, I do.
Fixed income and utilities didn't fare as well this week. Utilities had a pretty good year last year, but are down more than 5% year to date. Short-term treasuries are down a half point this year, while the longer-term treasuries are down closer to 1%. Commodities had a bit of a rough week as well, with oil down 1.4%, natural gas down 1.5%, gold down a quarter point, and silver down 1.1%.
That said, oil and gas are still at nice, yeah, solid levels. We're kind of where we want them.
Yeah, and also energy this year has been one of the top performers. Mm-hmm. This week was the exception to that, but year-to-date, I think it's still up over 6%, so not a bad start to the year.
Yeah, and we've got the point now where we've gotten to the point where energy companies can make money again, which means now that they've been deregulated and the shackles are off them, not only can they produce, but they will produce and they will make money, and all that drives even more jobs. So it's that spiral you hear about, that the good one, not the bad one.
The virtuous,
yeah, rather than the death spiral.
So the dollar, unlike U.S. equities, had a horrible start to the year, losing 1.57% in just 13 days.
Yay!
This is not a bad thing on every level, as you hear my dad cheering over there. There are several benefits to a weak dollar. It tends to boost sales for companies that generate revenue internationally, meaning U.S.-based companies that sell overseas will see a sales increase because our goods will appear cheaper to buyers overseas. It also tends to boost the price of gold. So those are a couple areas to look at if you're bearish on the dollar for 2018.
Yeah, you know, every year we complain about the size of our trade deficit, and it's going to go down as our imports rise, and their imports are going to rise because the dollar's getting weaker. Ronald Reagan knew that, and he actually gave a major speech years ago about why the dollar was too strong and what they were going to do about it, mm-hmm, and manufacturing perked up right after that.
Manufacturing is doing quite well right
it's
now.
It's doing great, and it's going to do better.
There wasn't a ton of economic data this week, but what we did see was kind of mixed. Next week has a lot more data coming out, including the first reading on the fourth quarter GDP, which I'm very interested to see the results on that. There was housing reports released this week, and if you're a regular listener, you know that we're pretty bullish on that area. We saw housing starts miss this week, which was surprisingly all in single-family homes, which is kind of against the trend the past year. Multifamily did very well. Building permits beat expectations, and home builder sentiment came in right in line with expectations. The data doesn't necessarily support what I just said about the housing market, but month to month, it's very volatile.
That's an arbitrary cutoff date, and there's weather factors too. Maybe people are going to dig a hole, can't.
You also have to take into account the trend rather than the month to month reports in housing. So
it's a great expectations problem again.
We're still very, very, we feel very good about the housing market right now. And it's early in earnings season, but so far, really good. There isn't enough data to read really yet, but so far, all the companies that have reported, over 80% have beaten on both sales and earnings. 80%, that is a big
unheard
number.
Unheard of numbers.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely unheard of.
So not, all in all, not a bad week. A little bit more volatility and a little less increase in the market, but still it's up.
How about first time unemployment claims?
Beat expectations by about 28,000, I think,
and were the lowest since the 1970s,
and that number does not take into account population growth.
No, this is astounding, people. Now jobs will come out in another couple of weeks, and from the looks of what I've seen so far, this is going to probably be something of a barn burner too.
I would think so.
We will have to see. But if you're really concerned about the stock market, you really only have to look as deep as the economy. Profits are what is going to drive the market. Profits are growing, doing very well, so don't be discouraged and don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have a call, but I want to do one thing first. I want to set up the trivia question in case the caller would like to take a shot at it. Trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 636-7888, and that, of course, is a 904 number. Government shutdown trivia. How many government shutdowns did we experience under President Jimmy Carter? That's the question. And this is Marshall. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen, Beach Boys.
Yeah, we crossed the ditch again.
My trivia question for today for y'all.
Okay.
The many things that y'all can do while listening to the Beach Boys on Saturday morning, one includes going to the Jacks Beach Public Works Department to take your hazardous waste this morning and your paper that needs to be shredded.
That is correct. That's right off
until
of
2 o'clock today.
Beach and Penman.
Yeah, it's Shedder.
Yeah, exactly, on Shedder.
Yeah.
So it's right off of Beach Boulevard.
And for people who don't understand what that is, that's the one place you can take an old computer or something like that, and they will dispose of it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I might be stopping there today.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
A couple things I want to get rid of.
The really nice one is the people from U-Shred bring their truck out there, and, I mean, they do shredding right. So you can take your documents that you're concerned from a security standpoint.
Right.
And load them up.
Cross-cut the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Can you stand there and watch it happen?
No, because they're just so stacked up getting it into their truck.
Okay.
They put it into their secure bins and then run the bin up.
You see them all over the place. I assume they're very reliable, or they would lose their reputation.
Absolutely. My question for you is, I understood Adam might have learned something from Jeff Ratner this week in a tax class.
Is there
anything in particular that stood out?
I thought the presentation was very good. They did have some technical issues, but that was not their fault. But overall, it was a good presentation. I always learn something, especially when it comes to this new tax law. There's just still so much we don't know about it and hasn't even been decided yet. So I don't remember off the top of my head, but I did have a few good takeaways. I wrote them down at the office and didn't bring them in today.
Okay, just want to make sure you got somewhere with it.
Oh, well, yeah, it was a good presentation.
What was the general theme of that?
Just talking about the new tax law.
Okay. Yeah. We can probably put a link to it on our website, right?
Is it available to everyone, Marshall, or is it only for RIAs?
No. Yeah, that's just for designated folks.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Over the next few weeks, we have already promised we're going to bring up as much of the things as we can as we learn them about the new tax law. You know, in all those pages, there's a lot of stuff buried in there.
Yeah, they probably could use a shredder.
kidding. Very true.
Let me throw you a guess on Jimmy.
Sure.
I respected him, although I disagreed with him vehemently on many things.
Mm-hmm.
He was the last of his kind that you still could say, you know, I actually respect the guy.
Yeah, that's pretty much true.
How about zero?
That is too low.
Okay.
This is not a new phenomenon, obviously, if we're going back into the 70s.
Yep.
But at least you've established a lower limit.
I got a baseline, right?
Yep. It's at least one.
Thanks, gentlemen.
That's what we know.
Alrighty.
Thanks, Marshall. Take care.
Bye-bye.
That recycling is really a good idea because you don't want to be throwing that stuff in the landfills, and they will take care of it right. So it's at Shedder, which is one block south of Beach, and it's in close to Penman.
Yeah, if you turn on Penman, that'll take you there.
Yep. And you'll probably see a lot of cars down there.
It usually gets pretty backed up. I've been there before.
Yeah, it does. All right. I wanted to, while we're on the subject, I just wanted to point out one little piece of hypocrisy before we go any further. Senator Dianne Feinstein said, people will die if the government shuts down. Now, is that on its face stupid or not? That's a different question. How did she vote? She voted to shut it down. So in her own words, she voted for people to die. I just want to point out a little hypocrisy once in a while when I find it. All right. We have better things to talk about.
We do. And it just wouldn't be a financial show in 2018 unless I mentioned Bitcoin.
Of course.
It is now, this week it dropped, the drop hit 40% from its high.
Wow.
40%.
And I didn't even buy it to cause it to go down.
I know, I was surprised. I thought you would have invested.
No, I'd do that when it's down 90%.
So yeah, it was it's a wild ride in Bitcoin. And that is not even close to the largest drop it's had on record.
No.
No.
True.
So the other thing we wanted to talk about were some of the biggest financial events of last year. And it was a pretty big year in finance last year. And if you were in the market, you know what I'm talking about. But what were the events that shaped the crazy year? I'm going to count them down from the least impactful to the most impactful based solely on my opinion of the magnitude of the event.
Sounds like Adam's version of Dave Barry's year in review to me.
A little bit, yeah. So number one, Trump pulls out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the TPP deal. This was a move that basically fulfilled a campaign promise that Trump made to get the U.S. out of this deal. The deal had never been ratified by Congress, so it was much more of a symbolic move than anything else. However, Trump felt that the TPP was going to harm manufacturing in the U.S. and therefore averted a potential disaster. We'll never know what the actual effects would have been, but it was on its face, he did fulfill that campaign promise.
We know what the aftermath has been.
Not much, as far as I can tell.
No, there's been no negative and a real rebirth of manufacturing in the positive.
So sort of along the same lines, the U.S. and China reached a $250 billion trade deal. The deal led to the resuming of U.S. beef exports to China, as well as opening access to U.S. financial services, biotech products, and liquefied natural gas. In exchange, China can now sell cooked chicken to the U.S., and the U.S. must now recognize China's OBOR initiative. This was China's response to the U.S. pulling out of TPP, which involves connecting China to other parts of Asia through better infrastructure. So what they basically want to build roads to other countries, because if they lose business to us, they want to be able to ship to their neighbors, which that was what we gave
it
in
sounds,
exchange.
It sounds to me like something that a sovereign country would be able to do without even asking anybody.
Everything's so connected these days, though.
Apparently so.
Number three, Trump pulls America out of the Paris Climate Agreement. This was a pretty controversial move and was seen by climate change supporters to be a death blow for the environment, but in reality it freed the U.S. from a very expensive and wildly unfair set of standards the treaty would have placed on American businesses.
About $1 trillion worth.
Yeah, that's a big number.
That's a big number.
Number four, Amazon buys Whole Foods and plans world domination. I made that second part up, but the first part's true. They did buy Whole Foods.
Or did they?
So in yet another sign that Amazon is planning on taking over the world, they purchased the Whole Foods, or some people call it Whole Paycheck, in August of this year, last year. Whole Foods is a chain of brick-and-mortar organic grocery stores with sky-high prices. The first thing Amazon did was to lower prices on some key items, and the plan is to get into the grocery delivery business. Is that an idea that the time has finally come? It's been tried a bunch.
Hard to say.
I can tell you we've been doing it. Not through Amazon, through another service.
Yeah.
And
there are a lot of them out there.
We love it. So, and I'm not sure if it'll work out for them, but I rarely would find myself betting against Amazon.
Publix is doing deliveries, I think.
They are. And a service called Shipt is the one we're using. It's great.
Okay.
So number five, CVS announces its plan to purchase Aetna for $69 billion. The move was largely seen as a response to the changing healthcare landscape, as well as Amazon's intention to get in the wholesale drug business. There's that word again, Amazon.
Hey, if they can't kill you if you're ahead of them.
Right. So that's kind of what we think is going on there. The deal is subject to regulatory approval, and it may not get it, but if it does, it's certain to change the healthcare system in coming years.
I'm going to predict right now it sails through.
You think so?
Yep.
Even with Trump, he's not real big on mega companies.
I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Okay. Number six was...
I would if they were two that did exactly the same thing.
They're very different. That's
yes.
True.
And when you blend them together, you've got a fuller service organization that's just bigger. That's why my prediction is that it sails through.
Okay. Number six was the weather. 2018 was certainly a strange year for weather issues. We saw massive wildfires in California due to the Santa Ana winds, and several major hurricanes hit the southeast and Puerto Rico, causing billions in damage. The effect of these disasters is going to be felt for a long time, both to the people still trying to recover from losing their homes and to the workers who have been deployed replacing and repairing the damage. So on the downside, it did a lot of damage. On the upside, it is providing a ton of new jobs.
Always a silver lining.
Number seven, new home sales hit a 10-year high. We still aren't seeing the numbers that we saw during the housing boom, thank goodness, I might add.
Yes.
But home sales are back on track after a 10-year hiatus. The housing market finally appears strong and healthy, and most people have recovered from their underwater mortgages obtained in the mid-2000s.
Yes, and houses are being sold to, get this, people who can afford them.
And people who are actually going to live in them, not investors.
Exactly.
So that's a good thing.
Are there still flippers out there?
Yep.
They're doing well? Yep.
Yeah, they seem
good
to be.
Good for them.
Yep. Seems to be a pretty big industry if you watch any HGTV. Yep. Number eight, unemployment reaches its lowest level since 2000. After many years struggling to find jobs, many people are back to work. The unemployment rate hit 4.1% last year, a lot better than in 2010 when it reached 9.8%.
Hmm.
Yeah.
How about that?
So I've got two more. We can get to those after the break.
But I've got one quick one for people. A lot of you are 401k owners, and a lot of you have outstanding loans. And most of you will know that if you have a loan outstanding in your 401k, it has to get paid back or it's going to become taxable income to you. This new tax law put in some breathing room for you, so you are less likely to have to get caught that way. And I can explain that as part of the discussion on the things that change week to week. But we'll be back shortly. We're going to finish up the financial stories, and I'm going to talk a little bit about some real-life questions that we've been getting in the office. You know how much I like to talk about things that are actually happening, and people have real, actual questions. So we're going to do that. It involves mutual funds and the time of year. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment's sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Believe it or not, it is that time when projects are about to start. Even though you might have been freezing while you were walking the dog the last couple of days, you can feel it in the air today, and the change is coming. So give Troy a call at 662-9794. And the trivia question still out there, sponsored, of course, by First Coast Alarm. How many government shutdowns took place under President Jimmy Carter? I didn't even remember that there were government shutdowns that long ago, but there were. Absolutely. All right, we've got a couple of the primo stories from last year to go. Are you counting them down in order of importance? Last, best,
yep,
first?
Exactly.
Go, good. So we're at number two. The runner-up is?
It's actually number nine, but same difference. Yeah. So the runner-up is the federal government collected a record amount of taxes in the first 11 months of 2017. And I did 11 because when I wrote this, the 12th month hadn't been released yet. So
that's only fair.
In the first 11 months, they collected almost $3 trillion as a direct result of unemployment dropping and more people paying taxes.
You mean you can grow your way out of debt?
Well, it does appear that way.
Not if they don't stop spending.
That brings me to my next point.
No, well, good.
The deficit is still $673 billion, so we're going to need a lot more people to get back to work to make up for that. So we're getting there.
But if you look at that as a percentage of the tax collection, it doesn't look quite as dismal as it did when we were collecting 1.7.
Right.
It's still dismal. And remember, every year you have a deficit. You have more debt at the end of that year than you started with.
That is correct.
And that is what's really getting out of whack. So
last but not least.
Number one.
The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was signed into law in late 2017, promising to save the average American family about $2,000 per year in taxes. The real benefit of this plan so far has been to investors and people that have gotten bonuses and raises out of it. In anticipation of this plan passing, the stock market had a wild year, setting 71 new all-time highs on its way to just shy of Dow 25,000, something many experts thought we wouldn't see for many more years. So that was the biggest event.
And if you count records between November 8th of 16 and December 31st of 16 and add them on to that, you get a really big number.
Yeah, I don't know what that number is, but it is larger.
It was something to the tune of 14 more.
Okay.
And
about 85
I read
total.
It not long ago. It's somewhere in that range. And now, of course, we keep doing it and doing it and doing it. So, anyway, lines are open. 222-TALK. It's 904-222-8255. Well, I love stories that are real. And nothing is more real to us than when we get the same or similar question from a wide variety of people. And lately, about the last month or so, we've had people pose a very simple question to us, and it's the same theme over and over. And basically, it says, why did my mutual fund do such a lousy job in December when the market's going up like that? There's an answer, and it's a very succinct answer, unless I'm telling the story. And then it's long and drawn out. See? Because I think to understand this thing thoroughly, you got to go back in history a little bit. Why? Well, let's talk about it. And remember, if you've ever thought that and you haven't asked anybody about it, don't be too surprised. Only 5% of radio listeners will ever call a radio show. The other 95, which I call the silent majority, thanks Nixon, are ones who don't know the answers any more than you do, but they're always ready to learn. So this is for everybody who's asked and people who would never ask. But I digress. Anyway, where did this all come from? Well, back long, long, long time ago, when commerce was developing and companies were growing hundreds of years ago, and you had company owners, and they got rich, and other people didn't, and then they took on partners and various ways people started owning shares of it. But it was still an elite program, a rich man's game, owning stocks and companies. So they were traded over here on the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street, and some were traded in coffee shops over the counter, which gave rise to the OTC market, which we more commonly call the NASDAQ, but it's really the over-counter market. And it was still a rich man's game. It was very, very expensive to buy and sell stocks. There was not public information. There was not public access. Well, there were people who realized that a long time ago in Europe, of all places. So it shouldn't come as anybody's surprise, I don't think, that people would want to participate in the ownership of companies. You know, I want to play. So back in 1822, King William I of the Netherlands caught wind of an investment trust that was set up in 1774 by a Dutch merchant named Adrian van Ketwich. You might figure it would be a Dutchman. And we interrupt because the rules are the rules and the callers have precedence. Good morning, Don.
Hey, can I speak to Adam for a minute?
You got him.
This is Adam.
Adam, a while ago, you made a statement about China buying chicken for us. We buy chicken from China.
Right. They're allowed to sell cooked chicken to the U.S. now.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
You sound skeptical.
Very skeptical.
Well, the problem that I'm having with that is, here in the state of Florida and southeast Georgia, all of our chicken houses are shut down. And we buy chicken from China.
Yep. That was part
and
of the
concession. We're buying cooked chicken from China. That don't make sense to me.
You want to take it a step further? They bought Smithfield, which means they've got the in on the ham market, too.
Our government is behind all of our chicken houses shut down. I can tell you, I really investigated this. Over Florida, they said that we had a chicken disease or something, and all these chicken houses there, and that big company, I can't remember their name now.
Tyson?
Tyson's one of the big ones.
Go ahead.
Shut down, and I'm just curious why the government will shut our chicken houses now and then be buying chicken of any kind from anywhere.
I think it was something that China really wanted, and mm-hmm. Trump had to concede something, so he chose that. And I don't know much about what happened in the negotiation, but for whatever reason, that was what he chose to concede. And so, yeah, we're going to be seeing a larger share of the chicken that we buy coming from China, specifically the cooked chicken. So they've always apparently been allowed to sell uncooked chicken, but now they can sell cooked chicken. I didn't even know they couldn't until I read this this article about it last week or 2 weeks ago.
Where'd you read that at?
That's a good question.
That is a good question.
I was probably on one of the major websites like MarketWatch or Yahoo Finance or something along those lines, my usual data sources.
If you Google it, it'll pop up.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, my point is, for the life of me, I have inquired in Tallahassee and Washington, and I didn't get an answer from none of them because they don't know what the hell they're talking about. They don't know what's going on. Well, they just come in here and said that there was a chicken disease, and this big company up in, I think it's in Carolina or someplace, they just come here and cut all the chicken houses out. They're all of them shut down everywhere in the state of Florida. It just don't make sense to me because that is a poultry that we need.
Yes.
And I, for the life of me, can't understand all the people that are unemployed, that's got money invested in their land, their chicken houses.
Yeah.
I was unaware of that.
It is a shame.
Yes,
I mean,
it is.
We hate to see any type of manufacturing or services like that go overseas.
I think we've got to be a little careful about the things that we allow China to take over.
They're really good at taking over about everything that we let them.
So. Well, they buy it with our money. We send them money because of the trade imbalance. That's one of the reasons I'm so fond of the low dollar. We send them money every month on the trade imbalance. They bring it back here and buy our assets. And that is a scary thing if you project it down the line a bit. So we agree with you.
I appreciate it, boss.
You want to guess on the shutdowns under Carter?
Sounds like we lost him. Oh, well. Thanks for the call,
Don. It's still out there, folks, and it is above the number zero. Anyway, back when the Dutchman got going with this fund, it eventually caught on a bit. So in 1849, Scotland got the bug, and they introduced other vehicles, and it started to spread throughout Europe to France and England and so on. And pretty soon over across the pond here, some people got together and said, me too, I want to play. And this will be, right after the break, how the mutual fund business got into being, how it became regulated, and why these questions are being asked. I do have a point. Stick with me. Trust me. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And Adam has a very quick follow-up on the Bitcoin discussion, something he just came up with that might get some attention. As you know, we're not fans of Bitcoin, but there's an underlying technology that we're very big fans of.
And that technology is called blockchain. And if you caught the show, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, I talked about how Bitcoin was something that I was personally staying away from, but I really like this technology behind it. I think it is definitely a big grower in the future. So there's a new ETF that actually tracks companies that are the biggest companies developing the blockchain technology. The symbol is BLOK. It just started trading. It has 48 holdings, including the biggest one is Taiwan Semiconductor.
And that's a great company, too.
Some others you might know of are Overstock.com. Apparently, they're big in developing this technology. And another one called Hive Blockchain Technologies. I don't know exactly what they do. But obviously, if they put it in their name.
Busy little bees, though, huh?
Yeah. It's an actively managed ETF. It has an expense ratio of a net expense ratio of 0.7, which isn't too bad
for an active managed specialty ETF. Not bad.
No, really not. And
we will obviously watch it.
It's something I added it to my watch list on Friday, and I will be keeping an eye on it because it's intriguing. I definitely think there's money to be made in that technology.
Yep, I absolutely agree with you. I was telling Adam in the break, there are very few things I would assert with more confidence than this technology has an excellent future.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anyway, back to Americans and their needs, wants, desires, whatever, to play in the game of owning stocks. Well, back in Boston, it started out basically when the Massachusetts Investors Trust was created in 1924, which was a kind of a leftover from the old Boston Personal Property Trust, which was formed in 1893 and then in 07 by Philadelphia-based Alexander Fund. But those are not traditional mutual funds as we know them. But as this happened now, some of you probably remember reading about a little trouble we had in the stock market in the 20s.
I remember something about that.
Yeah. It reminded me of 07 and 08, actually.
Yeah, the Great Depression. It was the only larger financial crisis than we had in 07 and 08.
Well, you know what government does when there's a problem? They do something. And what they did as a reaction to that was create the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which regulates us all today much more than I really wish they would have. But they have this need to grow because they're government, and they have a need to explain it, so they call it protecting the little guy. But I digress. this actually did help one thing. It laid out the rules for mutual funds, which allowed a lot of mutual funds to happen. So it sort of started the proliferation of mutual funds, which actually did a wonderful job of getting the little guy into the stock market. Now, I'm going to interrupt this because the rules are the rules. And good morning, Al.
How you doing there?
Great. How are you?
I was going to take a shot at your trivia
Please
question.
Do.
I think it's two, would you say?
It's actually higher than that.
Oh, it is?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
That's strange, isn't it? It's something none of us have ever thought about, but it's actually higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, got any questions?
Yeah, he was mentioning the blockchain ETF. You know, can you give me those ticker numbers again?
Yeah, no problem. It's just B as in boy, L, O, K, block.
B-O-K?
B-L-O-K, block.
B-L-O-K.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Start taking a peek at it. We're all going to be watching for a while. I really think this has potential.
Right. Okay. I'll do that. I'm kind of interested in that.
Great. Well, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Go Jags.
Got a little game coming up tomorrow, don't we?
Yeah, just a little one. Anyway, as the rules were set up and mutual fund industry started to become pervasive, companies sprung up all over the place. And one of the rules that they were required to live by has to do with the distribution of the money they make. Mutual funds, whether they're stocks or bonds, cash, whatever, they get some combination of interest payments, dividend payments, short-term capital gains, long-term capital gains, and they accumulate inside the fund and are not shown to their shareholders until the year is about up, and they determine by law now that they have this many net gains after all the expenses in the fund. They might have appreciation, too. You only recognize a gain when something is sold. So the day comes, and it generally is from mid to late November through early to late December. They pick a day, and they advertise that day on their website, and it's called the distribution date. So if you look at a website, we like to pick on things like Oakmark. So go to Oakmark Funds, go to their website, and it'll show you exactly what the distribution date is for each of their funds, and it will tell you how much. And here's where things start to get interesting. On a drab year in the market, almost nothing changes. There's not much turnover. Might be looking at a couple pennies that they pay out. They have to pay it out by law, but some years you just don't make any money net. So it doesn't really hit your radar when you're following the path of the fund. This past year was not like that. There was a lot of money made by mutual funds this year, which means a lot of short-term gains, a lot of long-term gains, a lot of dividends, and a lot of interest. So for the sake of keeping it easy, I'm going to just throw out some simple numbers because numbers are hard on the radio. But let's say we reached the distribution date in our mutual fund, and the price per share was $10, which is the net asset value. In other words, what is the value of everything in there? You add the cash to the market value of all of your other assets and divide by the number of shares, and what do you get? $10. Well, let's say the distribution date comes, and they've announced that their distribution amounts to $1 a share. So the day before the distribution, the fund closes at night at 4 and is valued just like every day of the year. And then $1 is distributed to each share, no matter who owns it, of the fund. So the next morning, you have a fund that was worth $10, but they paid out $1. It's now worth $9. So if you look at it and say, my gosh, the market's been good, but my mutual fund lost $1. What happened? And that's the nature of the question we're getting. Now, the only problem is that nothing is instantaneous about this. As good as all the computers are and so forth, by the time they value the fund, distribute, and reprice the fund to the $9 in this case, it takes a day or two sometimes to get on the radar screen. So people look at it and they see same number of shares, and it's $1 less, and the cash hasn't been credited yet. Now, some people take their distributions in cash. It can be sent to you or thrown in your account, whatever. Other people have to go in and want to go in and reinvest it in new shares. So they take their $1, and they buy one-ninth of a share with each dollar because the fund is now $9. Well, that whole process for a big mutual fund takes a little while. The problem gets really bad when they decide they're going to do this on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And especially bad when they decide they're going to do it on a Friday of a long weekend. So then Saturday it doesn't show, and Sunday it doesn't show, and sometime Monday, if the market's open, they will generally put it on your account, and all of a sudden you see, oh, well, I've got all the same money I used to have. It's just shaped a little differently. And that is the nature of the question. And if you're not paying day-to-day attention to this stuff, and quite frankly, a mutual fund investor should not be paying day-to-day attention to this because you'll drive yourself nuts, but that's another story too. What should happen at that time is a nice straight line moving in the direction of the market, so on. But what happens is you get up to a certain date in December, and there's a cliff that it falls off, and it backs way up and then starts up again. And you'd look at it and say, why? I don't get it. I've owned this fund for years and years. It's always gone up. And all of a sudden, in the middle of this new record-setting market, what happens? It lost money. That's why. It didn't lose money. It changed money. It changed from one form to another. You just didn't get informed of it at the moment it happened. That is the nature of the question that we were getting. Now, that is not the rule for exchange-traded funds, so this will not happen to people who are using exchange-traded funds, which are now becoming more and more popular. And one of the reasons is that transaction in the mutual fund was taxable. It can cost you money. I'm going to go into a lot more of this next week. The exchange-traded fund doesn't have to pay it out, so it's very tax-efficient. Where should you own a mutual fund? Where should you own an ETF? There are preferred methods for all of that stuff. The government shutdown was not an invention of the recent government. Way back in the 70s under Jimmy Carter, we had 5 government shutdowns. When you have a very polarizing figure in the White House, polarizing against Congress and so on, and coming in with radical new ideas to some, you will find that sometimes the only leverage they can get is to just shut her down and wait and see who blinks. Ronald Reagan had 14 shutdowns.
Wow.
Imagine the headwind that guy was putting up with and still getting it done. This is a tempest in a teapot. They all are. They always will be. It's no big deal. People are not going to die because of this. And if you get a little bit of a delay on trying to get something done, just put up with it because it's not worth the hassle. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.